Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast.
Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. I am back with Mom doing a part two of your homeschool Q&A. You guys sent so many good questions about homeschool. It's very evident that we are all in this together and all homeschooling, and we're going to attempt to answer some of your questions. And just as a reminder, from just kind of where we're coming from with all of this, Mom, you homeschooled for 26 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I am only less than a year and a half in. I was homeschooled, but less than a year and a half into homeschooling my own kids. So we have the master with years and years of wisdom. When she first started, it was literally illegal in California when she first started. Yeah. There was no curriculum. That's actually the first question we're going to answer. Mm-hmm. There wasn't curriculum. You had to make up your own curriculum. Mm-hmm. And then I am right fresh in it with the rest of you listening. So, hopefully we can speak to to the fears that I know all of us who are new at it are feeling. And hopefully I can speak to some of the questions and the freshness that that there is to it right now. Mm-hmm. So we got a couple of questions about choosing a curriculum. Mm-hmm. How do you choose a curriculum? Mm-hmm. And while we are in no way curriculum experts or reviewing curriculum or going to tell you which one to use, which is going to drive some of you crazy, I feel like this was a huge learning curve for me. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot about what curriculum is for and what it is not for and what it solves and what it doesn't solve. Mm-hmm. So, but Mom, you were telling me that there are like two stages of learning. Am I right?
Yes.
Can you tell us what those are? That was really interesting.
So even though in the early years and with me beginning, there were no curriculum sets that you could buy, even, you know, the Christian school curriculums refused to sell to, at first, to homeschoolers because they just thought this was such a bad idea to homeschool.
So
and then
dangerous.
When they did, you had to buy the teacher's guide, which was usually a big, huge binder that a teacher would use. And they were like $50, which, you know, back in 1985
that's a lot of money. Pretty intimidating. Yeah.
And, you know, as a stay-at-home mom, so we were trying to do this on a shoestring. But I had this amazing woman who, her name was Nadine Coates, and she had retired from the California school system, college, university system, with several master's degrees in different aspects of learning and teaching. So she was an incredible help, an incredible guide. But she explained to me that your average curriculum takes advantage because it's for, you know, a classroom of maybe 25, 30 kids, takes advantage of only one stage of learning, and that is what they call extristic motivated learning, okay. where outside rewards, I mean, everybody starts this way. Why in the world would anybody want to sit down for a half an hour and learn their letters?
Yeah.
It's because you motivate them with rewards, with mm-hmm. praise, with fun and cute little songs and stickers and whatever you use to motivate them. And that's good and normal and great. Can't mm-hmm. skip that.
Yeah.
But the real lifelong learners and the kids who become really successful, generally speaking, in school and still go on after school and after college to keep learning for a lifetime have developed what's called intrinsic learning.
Okay.
And that's that you yourself are rewarded by learning itself. Mm-hmm. You want to. You're motivated. No outside pressure. You're not trying to impress anybody. You're not trying to get straight A's even. Mm-hmm. You yourself gobble up learning and you want to master something, a new mm-hmm. language or maybe a career shift, something like that. So what this woman, Nadine Coates, encouraged me to do is when I was looking at with the piecemeal that we would put together of some sort of curriculums.
Yeah.
Aim for a transition at least by middle school and at least by high school.
Okay.
Where my children would want to learn. That it okay. wouldn't be me dangling mm-hmm. rewards over them. Although you still do that. That just yeah. makes life more fun. But, and it's also later becomes a way of recognizing that mm-hmm. they are self-motivated. But you do not want to have a high schooler who is only dependent on that estristic, yes. excuse me, I can't even pronounce it, yes. estristic reward, because that's just not going to work long term. No. They're going to lose steam.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, so when you're looking at curriculum, you kind of look at it through that grid. Is there, mm-hmm. What makes this interesting for my third grader to actually want to go to the next step?
Yes.
Or is it just me assigning another workbook page? And, you know, some kids love workbook pages.
Yeah.
Several of my kids loved workbook pages because it's just clean and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying no workbook pages. I'm just saying what rewards your child?
Mm-hmm.
And some of that is just understanding and getting a curriculum and realizing it's really dead and mm-hmm. it's not doing it for my kids. And you've had a lot of those kind of missteps.
I've got a lot of dead curriculum sitting in my garage.
But I would really like to just suggest that you plan for that. That's just part and parcel. You don't know who you are best motivated as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You've never taught before.
No.
And you don't know what motivates each of your individual children the most. Mm-hmm. And so some kids need bright and colorful. Some kids need, let's get this learned and let's get it on. I know our firstborn, John Mark, was more like, don't make me do this over and over again. I got it the first time.
Yep.
And so we did a lot of skipping of pages mm-hmm. Because he took it as almost like an insult that he was still working on the same thing that he uh-huh. completely understood. Whereas, you know, most of us need a lot of practice. Mm-hmm. So does that kind of answer your question and kind of help set you up to now start talking about how you started?
Oh, gosh. Yes.
And I would just have to ask you, did I warn you about that?
Oh, 100%. And did I listen? No. Which I laugh about and regret now, of just realizing everything I learned in the first year was stuff people told me. But honestly, every personality is different. But I think I had to just go through it and experience it to actually really mm-hmm. learn it and to trust that what everybody said was true and right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I am like structured and ordered. I didn't go into homeschool like super excited. I really want to do this. This mm-hmm. is my dream. I did it in the mm-hmm. beginning because our son really needed it and life was kind of crazy. So I was like, okay, I need open and go. I need it to tell me exactly what to do mm-hmm. every single day. But I also like really liked the idea of a literature-based approach where they learn everything through reading great stories. So I chose a program called Book Shark. It's like the secular version of Sunlight, which is another well-known mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. And we're a part of like a charter co-op, and they won't cover, they'll help cover the cost of curriculum, but not if they're faith-based. So that's why we went with the secular version. But it's just a ton of reading aloud. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful the way they've woven it together. Mm-hmm. They all connect beautifully. They write about what they've read about. And mm-hmm. I thought, this is perfect. This is, it's 4 days a week. It tells me exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. Well, we hit our first week and I did exactly what everybody told me not to. We just started everything all at once instead of like mm-hmm. a time of de-schooling, and because they were coming out of the public school mm-hmm. system. Instead of just, well, let's just read together first and then let's add math, which is totally what everyone told me to do. And of course, I didn't listen. And all of a sudden, I don't even like to read out loud. And mm-hmm. I chose this curriculum that required me to read most of our mm-hmm. subjects out loud in these mm-hmm. long chapter books to the kids, which was beautiful in theory. I still would love to do only that.
Yeah.
But was a struggle. And then it came with all these books for Duke to read. He hated every single one. Mm-hmm. He's like, Mom, none of those look interesting. They're all girly. Like they, because, you know, the curriculum tried to choose ones that would work for both genders, mm-hmm. but they really were more mm-hmm. like Scarlett's read all of them now. She loved them. Mm-hmm. And then Scarlett's, I didn't realize she was such a good reader. I'd say, okay, sit and read these 5 pages of Frog and Toad. And she'd come back 5 minutes later and she's read the whole book. And I'm like, well, wait a second. But then you skipped ahead a month in what you were supposed to read, because now you have to write about it. Anyway, all that to say, within the first month, I hated it. The kids were bored out of their mind. It was the same thing every single day. Uh-huh. And I realized I'm actually more creative than I thought. I actually don't mm-hmm. like that it's so structured.
Like tedious. Almost. Yeah.
And I didn't realize you can veer from the curriculum. Anyway, but that started a journey of us honestly trying and failing a lot of different things, and me learning to give us the freedom to give something a try and to ditch it if it's not working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in hindsight, I could have made the first one work, because mm-hmm. what I didn't understand going in, and I wish I had known this, because it would have changed how I viewed my hours of curriculum searching. But I didn't understand that the curriculum is meant to serve you, not mm-hmm. the other way around. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you use it in whatever way works for your family, not mm-hmm. just in the way it lays it out for you. Mm-hmm. You should do lesson 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I am a rule follower and more linear, and I kind of want it to tell me what to yeah. do. But I didn't realize you can skip a lesson if your mm-hmm. kid's like totally not interested in that mm-hmm. or totally has something. Or you can skip whole parts and use yes. it differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have adapted that original curriculum to mm-hmm. fit the needs of each of my kids. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know how. I didn't know you were allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And so I think that really changed how I looked at it, of more being able to look at something and say, would this work for the type of learners I have? Mm-hmm. Which I didn't even know fully what type of learners they were until we started doing it. But a couple of things I wish I'd done. I wish I had, in the beginning, before buying anything or really even looking deeply at curriculum, I wish I had just done a quick Google search of what are the different styles mm-hmm. of educating.
Okay.
Some of the main ones are traditional, classical, Charlotte Mason, unschooling, Montessori. There's a couple more. Or yeah, Montessori, Waldorf. There's a couple more. But if you just do a quick Google search and just read a paragraph about mm-hmm. each one and just see like what as a teacher resonates with you mm-hmm. is, and it doesn't have to be just one style. You can mix multiple styles. And what do you think might work for your kids? Mm-hmm. Because I think unknowingly I was trying to do like traditional public school. Mm-hmm. Even though I was homeschooled, but that was what was in my mind because that's what my kids had been in.
Well, you weren't sure if you would do this for 1 year or
no.
two Mm-mm. or for the yeah. long haul.
And had so much fear of what if I miss something? Mm-hmm. What if I put them back in high school and they don't know something? Because I was looking at it through education being linear. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize, this was also really helpful, that fourth grade is a repeat of basically everything they learned from kindergarten through third grade. Mm-hmm. And middle school is a repeat of everything they learned in elementary school.
Yes.
Which should just take the pressure off if you're like, I have babies and toddlers and we are not getting to geography this year. Mm-hmm. That's okay. You can hit it in fourth grade. You can hit it in middle school. You cannot hit it at all and they'll probably be totally fine. But yeah, I think like just understanding the different styles, because each curriculum will tell you it's based off of this style or it's a mix of this, you know, these couple of styles. I feel like that was really helpful. And then really, you know, I think as moms, our desire to give them this like rigorous education or to sometimes make ourselves look good or make sure that they're up to all of the standards, not just up to the standards, but surpassing them, can oftentimes cloud our view of what our kids actually need and the cues that they're giving us for what's working and what's not. Mm-hmm. And in the same breath, I think we can sometimes ignore if it's not working for you as the teacher, then it's not working for your kids either, because that means you can't be excited about it. So there was one we ditched because I hated to teach it. I was like, I'm so stressed out. Every time we come to try to teach language arts, I don't understand what I'm teaching in the way that they're saying it, you know?
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, but I think it's more often than not that we have kind of our own agendas of what we would like them to be.
Yeah.
And I think that was really something that the Lord had to show me and work out in me, especially because I have two very different learners. Mm-hmm. And one learns similarly to me and one learns totally differently than me and needs something different. And I was like, I still am learning. How do I provide that for you? Because that's not, she is very like, hands-on, and she wants it to be colorful, and she actually loves workbooks, and she, but it has to be fun. If it's not fun, I cannot keep her attention at all, and I don't need it to be fun.
A learning experience.
It totally
for her,
does.
Not just an accumulation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's sense. Something she has to do. I can't just say it. She has to then go and do it in some way that is fun, and then it will stick with her.
Yeah.
But we were doing this, writing curriculum called Essentials in Writing. And it was working great for my son. And Scarlett was doing just fine, like just making her way through it, not complaining. But then I would ask her, you know, every couple weeks, I would kind of review like, okay, what is a noun? What's a verb? What's it? And she's been learning it every day. I mean, it was like a repetitive curriculum. Mm-hmm. She didn't retain any of it. None of it.
Yeah.
Which was really telling to me of, okay, well, good thing we get
she
to repeat.
She likes doing it, but she's not
totally,
actually
but she's not
for
actually
her.
Learning anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think researching the different styles, really tuning into what do your kids need, and so important, recognize what stage you are in with your life.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I love the idea of a purist Charlotte Mason. Everything is read from an amazing book. I read to them all day long. I love that idea. That's how I would love to teach them, even though I hate to read out loud. I would love to teach them that way. But for our stage, that doesn't work for every subject because I have two toddlers and they're not going to sit still for 3 hours while I read out loud every day.
They're not really cooperating with this
plan. No. And so I've had to just change my ideals and realize, you know what? We can do that for history. Mm-hmm. History and maybe some science, that's how we can learn. And the kids are doing great with that. But I can't do that for every subject because it doesn't work in our current stage. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. So I think those are just some important things to understand, you know, before you even look. I just went straight to looking and thinking through what will this actually look like on Monday, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, I needed to look at all those things. But I think if I had understood the vision first of what I was actually looking for and how it is to be used, I think I would have just approached the whole thing differently. Mm-hmm. A couple of good resources to read before you start your curriculum search is the book Wild and Free. She actually talks about all the different learning styles and really casts just the beautiful vision of what you're trying to accomplish in homeschooling. I think that is just a beautiful resource. Another book that is a short read, I actually just bought it on Audible, and I think it's like 2.5 hours to listen to it. It's real short. It's called Teaching from Rest by Sarah McKenzie. And that I listened to it like 3 months into us starting to homeschool, and it just shifted everything for me. And she talks about curriculum, and she, I love, she says when she first set out, she, her goal was to give her kids this rigorous academic education. Mm-hmm. That was really important to her. But as she got going and she was talking to a professor, just seeking his wisdom, I think she had a couple kids that were school age, and she was talking about this, like giving him a rigorous academic education. And he told her, I might be butchering the story, but something like the Latin word for rigorous is mm-hmm. rigamore, which is where we get the word rigor mortis, mm-hmm. which is dead, stiff and dead.
I love this.
And how true is that? Like, we want our kids to learn yes. every single spelling rule and every single fact and date of history. Who cares what date certain yes. things happened? Yes. If you get the rough time period, great.
Yes.
But, you know, we want them to memorize all these facts and be able to speak a different language and speak Latin and, you know, which are all beautiful things. And some kids, that's totally going to be what you yeah. can accomplish.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of kids who aren't ever mm-hmm. going to thrive in that mm-hmm. type of rigorous mm-hmm. academic environment. So yeah. I think if we can just switch from that being our goal to really what you were talking about, the intrinsic. Really wanting them to love to learn, to love to read.
Yes.
I just heard of a recent study that said 42% of college graduates never pick up another book after they graduate.
That's just crazy.
Yes.
It's just crazy.
And so we want to whatever it takes, whatever curriculum it takes, whatever changing of plans it takes, mm-hmm. our goal is that they would want to learn way after, like their learning mm-hmm. should start after we're done homeschooling them. Mm-hmm. That exactly. they would be lifelong learners, mm-hmm. that any gaps in their education, they can go fill themselves mm-hmm. because they know how mm-hmm. and they want to.
Yes.
And, you know, take it from somebody who did not do this well the first year. My oldest was fine. And I about sucked all of the life out of second grade for Scarlett.
Yes, I've heard you say that. That's so sad. At the same time, here she is, you know, over at our house right now, working on her schoolwork, the stuff that she can do without you, and yeah. delighted with it, and no longer really fighting you on homeschool, which was kind of the first part of the story. And
yeah.
And she understands now that you're with her and you're for her, and mm-hmm. it's not you imposing your ideals on her. It's you coming alongside her and knowing what works best. And I think that's just beautiful. I mean, that has to do nothing but help her.
Yeah.
Just what an amazing thing. Think about that, growing up with somebody who wants what's best for you, but also lets you speak into what's best mm-hmm. for you instead of just imposing her own ideals.
Yeah.
So I think this whole thing is beautiful. Now, if somebody was going to start looking for a curriculum, mm-hmm. and even though it's kind of late in the year, maybe it's somebody who's realizing they need to abandon their curriculum quickly before everybody just falls apart, where would you have them go first, just looking for what's even available?
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's endless resources online, but two good places. So KathyDuffyReviews.com. Mom, you were saying she's been around since when you were homeschooling.
I think she was around back then. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she basically reviews every curriculum known to man, but she has her like top 102 mm-hmm. picks. And there's like, I think a little apple next to all of her favorites. And it's just a really detailed review of every curriculum, every level of every curriculum. And then if you find stuff that you're like, oh, that sounds like it could work, go to YouTube and just type in that curriculum and you know, so say it's The Good and the Beautiful. The Good and the Beautiful review, third grade, if that's what you're looking for, you know. And you'll find so many videos. You may have to sift through a few of moms who are showing you what it looks like in a day and the lesson plans. And I feel like you can get a pretty good feel of different curriculums through YouTube, honestly, and almost feel like you can experience what a lesson would be like. But those, I think, are just two, just like right out the gate, simple ways to research. And yeah, there are so many homeschool YouTubers who do a fantastic job.
That's so great. Yeah. We didn't have that back in the day either.
I know. Yeah. I mean, literally, and showing you how they make it work with a fifth grader and a second grader and a kindergartner and what they do together. And so I think that's just an easy way to learn, okay, but how do you actually do this?
Yes.
You know?
That's so good.
Yeah. And maybe we'll down the road talk more specifically about specific ones. I think, you know, we're hesitant to do that for a couple of reasons. We haven't gone through them all and have a proven product that they work great. But, you know, I've heard so many people say all curriculums are made by really phenomenal teachers and people who know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They all work. Yeah. It's just, I mean, they all work from an academic standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's finding one that works for your family, your kids, your stage. And so, yeah, like what you said, Mom, like maybe some people listening are realizing, oh, maybe I need to ditch what I'm doing for one of my kids or all of my kids or for me because I'm going to die. And just realize you have the freedom to do that. It doesn't mean you're behind. Yeah. You start over in January. You're not behind.
Yeah.
You've still been building massive things, character, academics, habit training, organization. You've been building all of that with whatever you've been using. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you failed because it's just not working for your family.
Yeah.
And what works for my family very well might not work for another family.
Yeah.
But one more thing on this note, Mom, you were talking about organization and that one of the amazing things you're instilling in your kids just by homeschooling, no matter what their personality is the ability for them to organize themselves, their learning, their thoughts. Can you speak to that a little bit?
First, as I've said here before, I am not a naturally organized person. My brain tends to just be all over the place. You know, Phil will sometimes say I live in a dream world and I think, oh, I like my dream world.
Yeah.
or I hear people say about being present, always staying in the present. And I think, who wants to do that? where's the fun? My mind naturally goes down rabbit trails. And so I've had to learn every bit of organizational skill that I have at this point, but it also helps that both of my parents were the most incredibly highly organized people just naturally. Mm-hmm. Now, they didn't quite know what to do with me, didn't understand the gaps in my ability. So it became a passion of mine to help my kids because I floundered. I love to learn. I love everything about school. I mean, the minute I go, which is crazy that I homeschooled because the minute I go in the campus of the elementary school. I remember picking your kids up there, Elizabeth. I just thought, oh, this is just like the best place in the world. Always wanted to be a teacher, which I would have been terrible at because of the whole controlling the classroom. But I needed to teach my kids to organize any sort of project because I didn't know how to do that when I was in school. And it was a big stretch for me to learn how to do that with homeschool. I went through many, many, many different teacher planners, you know, but it finally came to a way that could break down. I'd spend several days at the beginning of the school year just breaking down what needed to get done by what time and all of that, which makes a big project so much more doable.
Yeah.
So I worked with my kids from a place of deficit of myself. Every time I read another organizational book, I would pass on a few things to my kids because I just loved this. And I'm still working on it, still learning. Yeah. But I think a lot of kids may have been like me, bright, eager, wanting to learn and accomplish, but not having the organizational skills that you think are just normal because you're so organized.
Mm-hmm.
And watch for that, parents. Just watch and see the gaps. If your child is all of a sudden seeming to get messy, there's something in the organizational skills that isn't working. When somebody just told me, okay, so after every school day, make sure every single thing is put away properly. And you have a filing system and all that set up. Well, that was huge to me. My mind didn't go to that. Instead, I would just stick things in a pile and then be completely overwhelmed by the pile and the lack of organization. So help your kids. If you see a lot of procrastination, do not assume that your child is lazy.
Yeah.
Not unless they're showing laziness in every other area of their life. Instead, assume that they don't know how to start. I had this brilliant, he's actually a board member for Intentional Parents, this man who's his whole job is like with acquisitions in big companies and melding them together. And mm-hmm. he sat down with me for 2 hours and taught me some basic project management organizational skills. Well, I pull out the document of notes mm-hmm. that I took all the time just to be able to write a book or to do things. So yeah. your child might need that kind of thing too. Mm-hmm. And you might need that kind of thing just like me. So go for it, because I don't believe that you're handicapped by your mind that likes to go down yeah. rabbit trails. I think that's part of just who I am in a good way. Mm-hmm. I think up solutions differently than other people, and I get excited and motivated by life. But every one of us need these organizational skills, or it's chaotic, we're underachieving, mm-hmm. we procrastinate. And so, yeah, I think that's really important. And one other thing I would like to add is to what you were saying, Elizabeth, is this idea of memory hooks that somebody
oh, yes,
taught me.
Yes, this is so good.
So we think we're going to introduce a topic. So let's take history, mm-hmm. and we're going to study the Civil War in, or at least tell our kids about it in second or third grade. I love American history. So you present to them kind of what all the facts were, or you tell the story, or they have a textbook, maybe even put some things on a timeline. Mm-hmm. But you go back and study that again 3 years later, and your kids don't remember mm-hmm. really the facts. But what somebody explained to me is that any sort of learning you're doing all day long, if they read an article from a National Geographic Kids, or they watch something interesting, a documentary with you on TV, and mm-hmm. those create some hooks that later on, when they really seriously study something, they're able to hang the new memories on those hooks mm-hmm. and then hold on to them longer. So much of what we do in the first 3 years of homeschool, especially even 4 years, is just putting those hooks up
yeah.
all over the place. Almost like when you put hooks up so that the next year hanging your Christmas lights is a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. Kind of think that way. And it's not a waste because they forgot it.
Yeah.
Now they have subliminally something to hang that hook on and remember later.
Oh, that's okay.
And the other thing about curriculum has to do with a second grade teacher who was just amazing, Christian school teacher who came visit us in Portland mm-hmm. from San Jose, where we had lived previously and been friends. She told me that curriculums always give you too much material oh, yes. to complete, and they do that on purpose.
Yeah,
because it's kind of how they earn their money, you know. Yeah. I mean, they make them worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So they know, every teacher knows going into second grade that they're not even going to come close to finishing the curriculum. If they can get 50% of the curriculum done mm. by skipping other things, or even 75% of the curriculum, they feel like that was a good year. But they're constantly, every good teacher is tossing out the stuff that they say, mm. this is just time fillers, or no, I'm going to focus on this instead. And so should every parent. That was so freeing to me.
So freeing.
Yeah.
And I think most people don't know that
yeah.
well, I have to, I'm not going to finish
right.
what if all I don't the finish lessons the spelling on time. Book?
Yeah. The exception, I think, with that would be, at least in my case, I felt like math was the
totally.
Exception. And yeah. so our kids knew that they had to actually finish the last lesson of math before they were done with school, mm-hmm. which sometimes took us pretty late into June, mm-hmm. maybe even sometimes July, to make sure that we could finish that last one.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard a lot of teachers say, you know, all the different methods and you're wanting it to come alive. And mm-hmm. but they all say, but you just got to do math. There's really no yes, way to make yes. that super fun and intriguing and creative. And I was listening to, I think it was Julie Bogart from Brave Writer, who was talking about that and was saying, you know, when your kid is complaining to you about math and trying to get out of it again, just say, doesn't math stink? I don't really like it either. But you know what? We've all got to learn it. How can I make you be able to sit down and do it today?
Right.
Like, just, it's okay to commiserate with them a little bit
yes.
and say, yeah, you know, I know you don't like it.
Yes.
But you know what? Let me make you a cup of hot chocolate. You got to do
yes.
math every day.
There you go.
You know?
Yes.
And that in and of itself is so different than this is the lesson that we have to do today. You have to get it checked off your list. Go do your math.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
But just it shows them we see you. This is a part of life. We still have to push through things we don't love to do. Mm-hmm. But I see you. I feel similarly towards math. Yeah. And then there is the small percentage of the population who adore math.
Who
I am
love it
not
and hate everything
one
else.
Of those. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so next question. We'll do these next few pretty quick. But we got a couple of questions on working moms and homeschooling and how do you make that work? Mm-hmm. And man, I think that those of you who are right now working from home and homeschooling or distance learning and still working a full-time or part-time job, that is really hard.
Overwhelming.
And you're doing a really good job. Mm-hmm. And you need to know that. You need to hear that. You need to have people speaking into your life saying, I see you. I see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
Not impossible in most cases, but really hard.
Yeah.
And impossible in some cases. I mean, I can't imagine trying to teach a kindergartner and working full-time from home or, you know, the hands-on learning that that requires. Yeah. So
and what a personal cost it is to the mom because it is.
It's
a lot that will have – if important things that will have to be eliminated from her life in order to even just do what needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And we hope to hear soon – talk more about this and hopefully interview some other moms who are doing this really well or fumbling their way through it. And we really hope to talk about this more because I think this is more and more the reality of our culture. It's harder and harder to live on one income, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But and the reality is there are most of us moms are in some way, shape or form working, I hate to say, we're all working, whether we're stay-at-home moms or not, but how would you word it? Working outside the home or working a job inside the home that is not just running the home, you know, it's all the different.
There's just so many different ways now that weren't even in existence when I was a mom. It was either you were working or you were at home.
Yeah.
And I love the freedom and creativity that this whole new world has given to moms. At the same time, it's also a ginormous pressure.
Yeah.
There was never even a thought of me working outside the home just by the time I would have paid for childcare.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have even made financial sense. Mm-hmm. And so now it's a whole different time, but there is, we need to recognize there is a pressure involved with that too. Some women will just thrive on it, rise to it because they just need that stimulation for energy. But most women are going to start buckling under it at some point under the pressure.
Well, and I think too, there's this pressure that you have to kill it at your job and you have to kill it at home.
Yes.
And
you have to be in perfect shape.
Oh yeah.
And make from scratch perfectly healthy meals while you are having community group at your house and doing some sort of ministry on the side.
Yeah, which is completely unattainable for a group of five people, let alone one woman.
Oh, and belong to a book club of some very intelligent literature.
Yeah, and exactly. And so, yeah, I mean, what can we say about this, Mom? I feel like, you know,
I think we've come up with some ideas.
Yeah. And just help. A little context, Mom, you didn't work outside the home.
No, I didn't. But I was really involved in ministry.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that meant that
you worked and didn't get paid.
And, you know, that pay ends up helping a woman be able to hire some help and some, you know, house cleaning, a mother's helper. I did actually for a few years hire a mother's helper 2 days a week.
Her name is Jocelyn Smith. What that is for. What is a mother's helper?
A mother's helper is somebody who's not yet babysitting age, who comes to your house and plays with your kids so that you, number one, can get your sanity. Mm-hmm. Number two, get something done. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps teach your other kids for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And we hired this 10-year-old named Jocelyn Smith. And, you know, that way you're not paying babysitting wages, which are astronomical. When you consider that when I started babysitting, so I'm 61 now, so I started babysitting at what, like 15 maybe? Mm-hmm. I was paid 75 cents an hour.
Oh my God.
And then I charged, very daring because I had a lot of work, $1 after an hour after midnight.
Oh, wow.
Just because I hated staying awake after midnight. So, but, you know, usually a mother's helper is just, you talk to her mom and you ask what you would pay. Usually it's a neighborhood girl, so you're not mm-hmm. driving and stuff. That can just help you for a couple of hours. So that was one thought we had, is maybe having... Especially if you're paid for your work.
I think hire as much help as you can.
As you can, yes.
And don't try to do it all.
Which is just delegating. It's just delegating.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, I've mostly stayed home with the kids, but had a few things that were like mm-hmm. work from home, mm-hmm. Minimal hours. Mm-hmm. I could kind of flex it around mm-hmm. the kids. And then just recently, I've been working more part-time with Intentional.
Yeah.
And it's not, again, it's not set hours, so I can mm-hmm. kind of plan for, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to go do the podcast for 3 days mm-hmm. or, you know. But it's been a new dynamic mm-hmm. of having to juggle things and an adjustment of, because mm-hmm. now we're homeschooling. And I'm having to figure out, okay, on the weeks that there's more work with Intentional, that means I need to adapt how we do school.
Yeah.
And rather than, I mean, I am literally learning this right now. Like mm-hmm. Monday when I came over here to Portland, I tried to do a full school day before I left at noon.
Yes.
And, but I, you know, I have to get everybody ready to leave. And there's going to be a babysitter watching my youngest. So I have to make sure all their meals are, you know, it's like so many moving parts. And somehow I expected that I should get in a full normal school day before I leave at noon.
Are we seeing a pattern here, Elizabeth?
But, you know, I think things like that, just being like, you know what, on a more work heavy week, if you have a job like that, that's like not the same every week, mm-hmm. then flex things and do more school the next week. And and I think really get creative with the times of schooling. Involve your husband. If your husband's good at science and math, well, maybe he does science and math mm-hmm. with the kids at night.
Yes.
Maybe
this
they only.
This is a great point because we never even considered having your dad help with school. And there were reasons for that too. His ministry life was so all consuming mm-hmm. that I was behind that. I mean, I believed that this was mine. Mm-hmm. So that part of my ministry at that stage was to send him off, enable him to do a lot. Mm-hmm. And that was important to both of us. But he was never even thought about him taking. And now so many homeschool dads mm-hmm. take on something for their kids, which I think is so fabulous. Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, like science, you could do once a week. If mm-hmm. your husband is... Even if he's not good at it, if he could follow YouTube instructions or and just say, hey, could you every Monday night do science with the kids? So it's one subject I don't have to think about.
Right.
You know, that's just an example. But I think you can get creative. You can do school Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Absolutely.
That's totally okay. Yes. You have the freedom mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. A couple other practical things that could work, and one of which we're doing is do school 4 days a week, not five, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and give yourself that fifth day or one of the days on the weekend or whatever, just as if you didn't get to something during the week because life happens and work happens and things come up. Well, just do it on your fifth day, on your Friday or whatever. Mm-hmm. So for us, that's Monday through Thursday because Brooke has Fridays off. And so Fridays is like our catch-up day. And some weeks there's stuff to catch up on and some weeks mm-hmm. we got it all in. But you really don't have to do school 5 days a week. You can do it four.
Absolutely not. I never did school 5 days a week. It just didn't work with that. Mm-hmm. Sundays was such a busy work day. Mm-hmm. And your dad took off a midweek day. And I mm-hmm. wanted us to stop everything because he's like the joy and delight in our family. And we all kind of needed him. And then Saturdays were often, you know, seeing family and doing mm-hmm. household chores. So 4 days a week was perfect for us. Yeah.
And I think, too, there are so many online resources now that you can do for all of school or you can do for just certain mm-hmm. subjects.
Yeah.
And so I think if you have kids that are a little bit older who could independently learn mm-hmm. through some of those programs, Well, pick the subjects that are really important to you mm-hmm. that you want to teach them in the evenings or on the mm-hmm. weekends or whatever. And the subjects that you feel like you can let go a little bit more, find a good online program to teach your kids writing if that's not something mm-hmm. you want, if you're mm-hmm. not passionate about teaching them or, mm-hmm. you know, there's our kids do math online through a program called Teaching Textbooks. It starts in third grade and goes all the way up. It's working great for them. Yeah. I'm terrible at math.
Yeah.
And I just oversee it and make sure that they're not missing anything major. But things like that, I think that doesn't mean you're not homeschooling. That doesn't mean you're not doing a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. It means you're figuring out how to make it work
for your life.
Yeah.
Your calling.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think one thing I'm learning, and you did this too, Mom, and this is not possible with every job. We don't know the people who ask this. We don't know like what their schedule is. Are they working outside the home, 9-to-5 type of thing, mm-hmm. or, you know, what that looks like. But I'm learning that I have to protect my mornings because mm-hmm. that is our best school time. If I schedule something in the morning or have a phone meeting or whatever, it throws off our whole day. But if I can just schedule anything for the afternoon, then I know, okay, well, at least whatever we can get done before lunch, we can get a decent amount done then. And I don't have to worry. We've got a busy afternoon, so we'll just say we're done at noon.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's not easy. That means there are things that you won't be doing.
Yeah.
I do remember being at a church. My husband was on staff at a church. And coming into conflict with the women's ministry director because I could not afford to give a morning off. My kids were getting a little bit older. There was a little bit more that they needed to do school-wise, so I could not give a morning to Women's Bible Study. Now, that's a different era. Now, there's hardly any morning women's Bible studies because so few women can actually be free on a morning. But realizing, okay, I needed to grow up here, stand by my convictions, and say no and disappoint people, which is really hard for me. But I am so glad I had to learn that lesson then because it carries over to my life now. I'm at a stage where most of my friends are retired or retiring. Mm-hmm. And I'm just getting going.
Yeah.
And just to be able to say, but this is the way I chose to do my life. I spent all those years with my young kids who were spread out over 12 years. And now I'm jumping into more of a career mentality with both feet. And I hope to be doing this until I'm in my 80s. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to disappoint people and not follow the normal path of everybody else. So if you're needing to work, you know, not just for financial reasons, but oftentimes because you love it, because it's actually a calling and a vocation for you. You'd be unfaithful to God by not being involved. Then your life will have to look different than other people's lives. And that's okay.
It's okay.
You can still educate your children. You can still do after school kind of supplementation. You can still be involved in their lives. And that's good, but there will be a bunch of things that you don't do.
Yeah.
At this
and
stage
people
of
you'll
your
disappoint.
Life. You might do them later, but at this stage of your life, you won't be able to do everything. Mm-hmm. Nobody can do everything.
Yeah. That's so good. Okay. Lastly, to wrap it up, we've gotten a few questions on how do you make this work financially? How do you make it work financially to homeschool? And again, we don't know if these people asking are asking, like, if you don't have the resources to buy certain curriculums or if you can't quit your job and homeschool full time, you know, we don't know what specifically they're asking. But can you talk about that a little bit, Mom?
Well, we didn't have very much money, as you know, Elizabeth, when you were growing up.
I didn't know growing up.
You didn't know growing up. And now you look back and you realize, whoa, that's interesting.
And I have four of my own kids and I realize how much it costs to feed and clothe.
Somebody gave us some advice one time when we were pretty strapped with four children. And Phil was on an associate pastor's salary, which in any age, it's not a lot of money.
No.
And what we had great was we had good health insurance. Every church we've been a part of has made that a priority, which is incredibly, incredibly helpful. But somebody said, when your budget doesn't line up, and it's not realistic, which ours really did or was, you have two choices. You either need to work more to earn money. I mean, that's just our life. Nobody owes you anything. You work more to earn money, or you spend less to be able to live on what you make. So our option was to spend less. Mm-hmm. And you can actually, so to speak, make a pretty good salary by really not spending that much money.
Yeah.
And I'm sometimes alarmed in this day and age, and this is going to make me sound really old and grouchy, but I'm going to say it anyway. What people now think they need.
Yeah.
And it's because everybody else seems to have it. Now, they may be in debt up to their ears in order to have it. But I think that I know of a friend of yours, especially Elizabeth, and others who just do an amazing job of honestly evaluating what are their needs and owning the fact that they're choosing to stay home and homeschool.
Yeah.
Or they're choosing a really good curriculum that's a lot of money because it's just going to do them so much good in their home. And by making that choice, you know that there's going to be a bunch of other stuff that you cannot do.
Yeah.
And that's hard in an entitled society.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also so freeing when you know you don't have to make a lot of money. You get to explore all sorts of options of how you will live. So, quick story for me, I never made money when the kids were little. Started to make a little bit of money, be paid sometimes for ministry responsibility, never very much. But then had the dream of being a writer, of actually trying to see, could I actually make it as a writer? And with my husband's permission and major life changes, like selling our house so that we wouldn't have a mortgage and buying this little fixer-upper that we now call Furwood Cottage. And I just love it. It's beautiful and I'm amazed. But at the time, I had no hope that it would be someplace pretty.
Yeah.
It was really ugly.
I told you not to do it.
Oh.
I was like, that's just a never-ending project. It smells like cat pee.
Exactly.
That's a terrible house.
And it was never built to be a nice-looking house, you know, but... Anyway,
our kids are here. They were talking about that this morning because you guys added on.
Yes.
And Scarlett goes, do you remember how tiny this house was before you added on? And I was like, kids, there are smaller houses than even this. You used to live in a smaller house.
That's right. It was 1,100 square feet when we moved in. And but because we made that choice, I was able to experiment and try, and I gave myself a couple of years to see if it would work. I was able to chase a dream.
Mm-hmm.
It was tempting to just go to work and do what I'd been doing and only do it full time so that we would have some more money to work with. But there is such freedom, I'll just repeat it again, of realizing you can live on less and make a go of it and try and actually get to do what you love to do. So that's a whole other thing, but it's worth it to some homeschool parents. If you feel like it's worth it to keep to one income and have less, and you can actually manage to make that work.
Yeah.
Then go over that budget with a fine tooth comb.
Mm-hmm.
It's the monthly, it seems to me that it's the monthly expenses that add up us and sink us.
Oh yeah.
You know, the Netflix and Hulu and Disney Channel and your cell phone plan and those will sink you. Look at those first, see which ones you can trim and still have some fun in your life.
Totally. Yeah.
And just get creative and have fun if money is a problem for you.
Yeah, I think that's good. And what I hear you saying is it's a mix of practical and perspective. And I think, you know, the practical is different for every family, like what your situation is and if it's even possible to live on one income or one and a half incomes or, you know, that's going to be different family to family. But we can all take a really good look at where our money's going.
Yeah.
You know, Brooke and I are like religious budgeters because we've always had to be. But we started like 5 years ago using this app called YNAB, You Need a Budget. And it has been so helpful. It changed. We budgeted before, but this is like you budget every detail.
This is hardcore budgeting.
But we just fit it into our life, you know. And I feel like it's given us so much freedom to always know where things are at, mm-hmm. to be able to plan for things, to know what we can say yes to, know what we need to say no to. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's more work. I literally record every transaction that mm-hmm. goes in our bank account. But it's helped us so much and made us feel like we have more freedom. Mm-hmm. But then I also hear you saying, and this is huge, is it's all about perspective. Mm-hmm. Because how often, and we all do it, I do it, you've done it, mm-hmm. fall prey to, you know, what we see all around us of mm-hmm. everybody has more than we do. We yep. need more. If I had this thing, it would make me happy. If I had this curriculum, my homeschool would run mm-hmm. perfectly.
If I could go on a real vacation, like at a yes. hotel and yes. eat out.
Hire a babysitter for a date. Like, you know, and it's none of those things are bad. Even mm-hmm. the desire for those things mm-hmm. is not bad. There's even studies that have been shown that your life does actually improve above yes. a certain level of yes. income. But I think it's like 80 grand a year. It's not like 500. And the studies have proven that like after that,
yes,
your life really doesn't improve with more money.
Yeah.
And what's it? More money, more problems. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, it's not bad to want those things. It's mm-mm. not bad to work to hopefully someday be able to have those things. That's not bad. Mm-mm. That's not what we're saying. But when we fall prey to the mentality of, gosh, I can't do all of those mm-hmm. things because we don't have enough money. Mm-hmm. But what if we switched our perspective and said, you know what? I'm making a choice mm-hmm. to not work or not mm-hmm. work full time or stay home and homeschool my kids or whatever the choice is that you as a family have decided to make. I'm making that choice. And mm-hmm. therefore, here's all the benefits that come with that choice. Mm-hmm. I'm doing what I really feel like our family's being led to do. Mm-hmm. And here's the choice I'm also making. We're not going to have as much money right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be able to buy the nicest version of everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm making that choice.
Yeah.
And I think often...
We own it. Yes. I love the idea of I own the choices I make.
Yes.
It's just so, for want of a better word, empowering.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And it just changes the perspective. Mm-hmm. I feel like one thing... You know, because obviously we see this in our kids, this insatiable need for more. Well, mm-hmm. I want this toy and mm-hmm. I want this video game and I want, you know. And we've been talking to our older kids a little bit more about money. They've just asked more questions. Our oldest was kind of asking, like, it was funny. We had this, it's another story for another time. But he was kind of, you could tell, trying to figure out, like, where are we at financially? Like, yeah. I know we have enough money, yeah. but like... And so I was explaining to him and I was explaining it to him because I have to do it to myself a lot of the times. Saying, you know, buddy, we live really well. And we do. All of mm-hmm. us have, we had enough money to buy healthy food, which costs mm-hmm. more. Mm-hmm. We have a car that's reliable. Mm-hmm. It's not some super nice car. It's like 12 years old, but it's totally yeah. reliable. Mm-hmm. And we live in a super comfortable house. We have everything we need. We mm-hmm. really don't live without. And I know there are some people listening who are living without yes. a lot more yes. than we are living yeah. without. But we don't have extra.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we don't have money or don't yeah. have enough money. We mm-hmm. we use it to live really well. Mm-hmm. But we just don't have a lot of extra if we see something that we're like, I really want to buy that. I'd use the example mm-hmm. of that $500 chair. We mm-hmm. have a spot in our house that could use a great reading chair. It's like, well, mm-hmm. we don't have that. We'd have to like save for that, talk about that, mm-hmm. think about that. But I was telling him that more because I have to tell myself that of to look around and say, look at these gifts I have. I actually have a lot. Mm-hmm. And when I focus on that versus, man, I really wish I could go buy that new pair of boots or I can, mm-hmm. you know, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
It changes everything for me.
It really does.
And it really is.
And it changes things for your kids too.
It totally does.
A woman, a wiser woman than I, once advised me, never say to your kids, I can't afford that.
It's good.
Because really most things we can afford. It's that we choose not to use our money that way.
Yeah, because we're using it somewhere else.
Because we're choosing to use mm-hmm. it in different ways. And my husband had a house before, owned a home in Los Gatos, California, believe it or not, before we were married. Now, it was a piece of junk kind of home, yeah. you know, cardboard walls.
And but, 40 years ago, so you could yes. buy a house in Los Gatos, California.
So the fact is, often we had to remind ourselves, well, we have the money, but we're not going to let go of this house because for the long term, keeping this equity in a house will serve us well. So we had the money, but we were putting it into a house payment, stretching into a house payment. It just reminds yourself all that. That's not the way we choose to spend our money right now. And obviously, I'm talking to middle class and above.
Yes.
Because we're not a third world country. We are not without work.
Yeah.
So please excuse us if your situation is dire and desperate.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What we're saying doesn't really apply to you. But for the most of us, it is like you said, Elizabeth, it's choices not to go. You don't get to buy a pair of new boots
anytime I want.
Yes, exactly. Or the chair for the reading corner.
Exactly.
Or the exact cuts of meat that you would choose to, if you could.
Yeah.
But those choices we make, and we're not going to regret the choices that we made. My mom worked while my dad was in college at Oregon State, if you can imagine. Back then, they graduated free of debt with no help whatsoever from parents in 4 years. And that was doable because there were no loans to be had. And all of their friends were in the same spot. But she often would say, I'm sure you remember Grandma saying this when they were retired and had lots of money and they had lived a very good life.
Yeah.
That was the best 4 years of work that invested possible.
Yep.
And that was like a sweet memory to them both. The poor years, they would say, where they barely could make ends meet, but they did make ends meet,
and they were doing something meaningful. They were doing something super meaningful. And I think, you know, we got to wrap up, but I was just thinking, don't you think the same is true of time? How often do we say, I don't have time to do that? I don't have time for myself. I don't have. And the reality is, if you've got a bunch of little kids, or you're homeschooling, or you're working in homeschooling, like, yes, that's true. Your time is dictated to you. But I think, you know, I think we talked about this on another episode recently, but where there's 16 hours in a day that we can use, that we're not sleeping. And I think, man, what if we had that perspective of, no, it's not that all of my kids and all these things are taking all of my time. They're taking a good portion of your time. Absolutely. But we have more control over the other, the fringe hours of the day, the other hours of the day than I think sometimes we allow ourselves to realize. And we can get so stuck in this like mode of self-pity of I don't have enough time for myself. I can't go buy the thing I want to buy or whatever. Like, and again, like you said, some of this, these are also legitimate things. And there are a lot of people who are really struggling financially and really like at the end of their rope and don't have time. I think we're talking about more the majority of us who maybe that's not 100% the situation. But yeah, if we just changed our perspective of that and just said, no, you know, I can use my time a little differently. I can choose to learn how to organize my time like you've had to do. Or I can choose to prioritize my time or whatever. I think
Elizabeth, I'm sitting across from you thinking, this is you talking. Four kids who are all home, two toddlers, one special needs toddlers. And those two toddlers is like having two sets of twins from my perspective. Yep. I'm watching this and thinking, plus you have all the therapy things you need to take Birdie to. I mean, there's, and then orthodontist appointments and, you know, all sorts, some health struggles that you've had.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at your life and thinking, if any woman alive could say, I don't have any time, it's you.
Oh, and I've said it and do say it.
I'm just laughing, thinking, but look how carefully you use your time. And you still don't have enough time.
No, there's never, I don't think there's ever enough.
You could really use another few hours every day.
Somebody asked us.
When your kids are older.
We were with some friends for dinner last night and they were just great question askers. And he asked, he said, okay, just like not reality question here, but if you didn't have to sleep, if you were the only person in the house or in the world that didn't have to sleep, you just never had to sleep, what would you do with those
nighttime
hours? I was like, oh my gosh, this is a great question and a terrible question because then it's going to make me think of all the things I wish I was getting to.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was even just good to think about, even as far as like prioritizing how you used your time, being like, well, what would I do? What are the things that I am not doing right now that I actually like deep down wish I could, you know? Anyway, it was just a good thought-provoking
Let's just leave them on that question. If you never had to sleep again,
what would you
What would you do with those 8 extra hours?
And he said, and everybody else was sleeping. So it's not like it's not like nobody had to sleep.
Yes.
Your kids were asleep. Your husband was asleep.
Your
job was asleep. Yeah, you really were free.
Wow. And like I said, I think on a previous episode, I think I lived most of my life thinking that we had 8 hours a day until I realized that, oh no, we have quite a bit more than that. So we leave you with that challenge to just change our thinking, help each other change our thinking, and
get
you
creative.
Can do what you are actually called to do, and all the rest is unnecessary, demanding fluff.
Yeah.
And so let's just make sure that we are orienting our entire lives around the Lord Jesus Christ, that we're listening to him, that we're in the word. We all have time
to
get up
time.
In the word. We're in the word. We're listening attentively so that we can actually get that kind of guidance that he offers us for free whenever we ask it.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes if you enjoyed today's episode and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.